Welcome, Sazad, and thank you for joining us for this week's UNE International blog. So, Sazad, you are a student in peace studies. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Yes, yes. So I've known you for a little bit myself. Most of our listeners may know you or might not have seen you around at the UNE. So we might just start off today by asking a few questions about yourself. So from my understanding, you've had a very interesting life, traveling around all the corners of the globe, studying from Bangladesh up to Norway. And well, I guess now UNE, studying with us. So yeah, we might start with you telling us a bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and more importantly, what brought you to UNE.
Thanks, Harry, for connecting me and just adding me to your UNE blog. And this is Sajjad Siddiqui from Bangladesh. In fact, back in Bangladesh, I am a faculty member of Peace and Conflict Studies at the University of Dhaka and have been teaching for the last 12 years. And in 2014, I went to Norway for my another higher degree. It's called Masters of Philosophy. And I did work in the same field where I'm doing my PhD right now from University of New England, UNE. And in fact, the teaching is my passion, research is my passion, and the study is my passion.
And, excellent. So a big change from Bangladesh to Norway, I'm imagining. How was that?
Yeah. And because, Norway, the culture, their traditions, and altogether, the quality of education attracted me. And after all the scholarship they offered me was fascinating. And it's really enriched my academic scholarship, and both as a people to think about the society, to the world politics. Altogether, the Norway education really gave me a lot to my career and my thought pattern.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting and lucky experience to be able to travel around and study like that in very vast and contrasting areas of the world. So, well, it's a big congratulations to you for taking the step to do it. Thank you. Fascinating. So then from Norway, I guess, what was the big driving force to come to a little quiet, tiny Armidale?
Oh, that's a fantastic question, because, the reputation of peace studies and of the University of New England mostly fascinated me, I must say. And especially for higher study, I like the small and the countryside, and not the. In fact, I'm not that fan of big cities, big metropolis, and and of course, I'm getting benefit of choosing Armidale, and in fact, Armidale is very quiet and study friendly, and part of the decision also came from living cost is less expensive in Armidale. And finally, I must say, the prestigious IPRA, International Postgraduate Research Award Scholarship, convinced me to start my PhD journey in the UNE.
Excellent. So, yeah, it's good. Do you want to just elaborate a little bit? What does the International Peace, what is it, IPRA Scholarship?
IPRA Scholarship, International Postgraduate Research Award.
Excellent. So what does that enable you to do? What advantages do you get from this scholarship?
Oh, because when I saw the advertisement for scholarship, then I applied it, and because it requires additional degree, good number of publication, good quality publications, and of course, length of service. The career service I passed in my life altogether, and the results, of course, the credentials, academic credentials proved that I'm the eligible, and that's why I just accepted happily the scholarship and I started.
Excellent. Well, more than happy to have you in Armidale, and more importantly, UNE studying peace.
Yeah.
And yeah. as probably for people who are with UNE, but are studying online, which is a lot of our clientele. Armidale is a very multicultural community, as you're probably aware. We have, personally, in my department at UNE International, we do a lot of multicultural events, especially the Culture Fest held at the end of the year. But have you noticed, for a small regional town, considering that you've travelled all across the world in various different areas and experienced various different cultures, is Armidale unique in the fact that it is so multicultural for such a small regional town?
Yeah, that's I missed this part because it would be better to tell from my part. When I found the international office of the UNE, and they organize so many international programs like sightseeing, and the even including the cinema, movie festivals, and also a friendly football tournament with the New South Wales Police Department in Sydney. Altogether, I must say it's a multicultural, and though it's a countryside university and Armidale is a countryside, but I must say it's more than that of so-called metropolis. And people are very much interacted with each other. They take friendly each other, and it's really lovely chance to get others' experiences from diverse backgrounds.
Yeah, and for those listening, that's how I actually first got the pleasure to meet Sazad at the international football competition, which is held annually at Coogee Beach. So I don't know how we're tracking for this year, but anyway, hopefully maybe the following year that we can go down with a few international students again. Hopefully. So we might segue into hearing a bit about your PhD now that you're here and at UNE and you've started a new chapter in your life. Your PhD is titled Post-Liberal Hybrid Peace. Excuse me. Could you tell us a bit about your PhD, what it entails, and who you're working with?
Okay. The very title of the PhD is Post-Liberal Hybrid Peace Building, Examining the Role of Peace Infrastructure, Positive Peace, and Indigeneity in the Post-Accord Chittagong Hill Tracks of Bangladesh. I mean, I just used three independent variables from the peace scholarships, from the peace epistemologies, and one dependent variable. The dependent variable is the hybrid peace. I mean, from the liberal ideals and the local ideals together, we say hybrid peace. So it's of course a novel investigation adopting a post-positivist sequential explanatory approach under the principal supervision of Dr. Bart Jenkins and co-supervisor Dr. Anthony Lynch. Theoretically, this critical interplay between independent variables and the dependent variables examines their relationships, whether there is any relationships in between these variables, and to see the predictability of these three independent variables. I mean, among these three independent variables, as I said earlier, which does predict more the hybrid peace. And this approach helps examine the inherent flaws of peace building interventions that could be responsible for post-accord CHT back in Bangladesh intractability, because this conflict has been lingering even after the accord. We have accord in 1997. So I hope this methodological investigation will help the policy decision maker how to overcome the existing intractability. And using these peace epistemologies to examine peace effectiveness is both an opportunity and a challenge, I must say. And for policy recommendation, there is a very precise findings of my PhD thesis. Among the three independent variables, which does predict more, I found positive peace does predict more with a beta score 0.56 with an adjusted R square 0.67, where p-value is less than 0.001. I mean, if policy decision makers wants to take my finding, then I mean the compared to other two variables if they focus more on positive peace approaches rather than peace infrastructure or indigeneity or any other security issues that might be effective, more effective to ensure peace in the post-conflict CHT in Bangladesh.
So hopefully it'll be a very positive implementation once you finish to that post-peace building in Bangladesh. But for a lot of our listeners, they might, they might not be aware of, firstly, the conflicts within Bangladesh. Do you want to really briefly explain that?
Okay. Bangladesh is a very new, it's not very new, it's a new independent state which got its independence in 1971. And since after the independence, Bangladesh has an extensively hilly area, what we call Chittagong Hill Tracts. I mean, there are three district hill districts. So they are very different to the plainland people like me. And they have been struggling for their own identity, but the constitution, from the constitution to the root level people, everybody has a very weird look to them. And they have been struggling for this, for ages. But in 1997, there is an accord between the Chittagong Hill Tracts belligerents and the Bangladesh government. From the belligerents' parts, there is a political platform, Parbotto Chattogram Jono Shanghati Samiti. I mean, the peace people's representatives. I mean, the indigenous people's representative. So there is an accord signed in 1997, 2nd December, but now it's almost 22 years. But still, we see the low escalated conflict, violence, and the human rights abuses, so many things. So that's why I was convinced to work why conflict is still happening or taking place even after the accord signed in 1997. So this is all about the people who are living in the Chittagong Hill Tracts and their cultural traditions and their beliefs, how all these together makes a difference between us and them, and how this peace, this area can be ensured as a peaceful area.
Yeah, excellent. And I think a lot of people would be unaware of any type of conflict in Bangladesh like that. So it's nice to hear from you being personally connected to Bangladesh and also working so closely resolving some of those issues. And let's just try to break it down a little bit more for some of the listeners that might not really know what peace studies entails or what the discipline of peace studies is. It is, might sound funny when I say this, but it's biased towards peace. But in order to understand or implement positive peace or peace practices, you need to have a relatively good understanding or a very good understanding of violence. Am I right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because usually in earlier times, we used to understand peace as the only absence of direct violence. I mean, no war, peace is there. But in the late 19th century, some peace scholars came forward to divide and to have a new discourse that, no, despite there is no direct violence or conflict, there may have poverty, famine, or limited access to health, education, etc. So these peace scholars identified all these things as a whole as negative ingredients. So they are arguing until and unless we abolish or at least eradicate all these negative ingredients, we can't say the society is in peace. For example, in earlier times, tuberculosis, people used to die of tuberculosis. But since when the antidote of tuberculosis came into available, and even after the availability of the tuberculosis antidote, people are dying, then we are saying that he or she is victim of structural violence. So the scholars identify all these things, which is avoidable, but still we can't avoid, and people are victim of that, then we say these are structural violence and people are victim of structural violence. So the 21st century peace is not about only the absence of war, rather absence of all these negative ingredients, I mean the structural violence ingredients.
Yeah, I think when people think of violence, they automatically think of physical violence, you know, like someone shooting their neighbor or whatnot.
Physical assault,
multiple layers in cultural violence, structural violence. So that's it's good to hear that they are now being all addressed so we can effectively implement peace. So you mentioned previously that you're working with the fabulous Bert Jenkins and obviously Tony Lynch with your PhD. Just quickly, what's your experience been with both Tony and Bert, and how's your whole experience over the past 2 years with UNE looks like?
Simply, it's excellent because they are both of them are very much caring and professionally dedicated to enrich my PhD work and the regular meeting. And whenever I feel any, problem regarding technical or academic, they just come forward with a big heart. That's really makes difference to other people, other friends. People, they are doing PhD beyond the UNE or other countries. Their lovely cooperation. I must say their expertise all together. It's a fantastic experience to work under these two big professors.
I guess that's they're definitely well-renowned professors within their respective fields. And to be able to have a campus in Armidale with these, they're only some of the many amazing professors that we have, but to be able to easily walk up and spark a conversation and they're all willing to talk to you adds just an extra benefit to studying at UNE. So it's lovely to hear from you, being traveling around all across the globe, that your experience is like that at UNE.
Thank you.
So just to wrap it up quickly, Cezard, I think we can't get out of this podcast without talking about COVID-19. it's definitely taken up the bandwidth of all media and conversation at the moment, especially for myself, and I assume it would be for everyone. So in regards to peace studies, we seem to be fighting a common enemy. All of the globe's fighting this common enemy that is COVID-19. It does a situation like this, like this pandemic, does it bring us all closer together in a peace situation? And how, as a peace studies lecturer and a PhD student at UNE, how would you view this from a peace studies lens?
That's really a very daunting question because, you know, whenever it's still very much debated, it's a human-made or naturally evolved the havoc. Yep. But whatever the debate is, keeping aside all the debates, if we see, it's really devastating our daily lives, the economic fall, and the relationship between families, between countries. I mean, it's affecting in a multidimensional way. So what should we do? That's a big question. Look, if we go back to the history, then no pandemic lasts forever. But what we should do after this pandemic, that should be the primary concern and the foremost concern of the world leaders, world heads. The world heads should sit together, I think, after the pandemic or even during the pandemic, and so that they can face further world war like this pandemic. For example, the lesson from COVID-19 should be from two perspectives, I must say. That is, that my research findings, that the positive peace really give you sustainability, I mean, if you do more work for the positive piece, epistemologies, I mean, like human survival, health, environment, and all these together. And there is a good term in peace studies that we call peace dividend. Peace dividend usually means that reducing the budget for the military, spending this money for education, health sector, and environment. Those sectors will give you a sustainable environment for the human survival. So I must say, it should be realized by the global superpowers. And they should, and it was done after the Second World War. I mean, peace dividend was practically experienced after the Second World War. But again, after the 9/11, I mean, yeah, 9/11, because there is another thing in Bangladesh politics is 9/11. But after the 9/11 terrorist attack, so-called terrorist attack, the world again just increasing their budget in the militarization and the and the weaponization. So I must say, the government, the world heads should sit together and to decide unanimously for reducing the military budget and going for this type of social and political and economic sustainable sectors to bring the sustainability of the world, and especially for the environment. And another good suggestion could be effective, emphasizing on the International Emergency Response Fund to fight back against any further future pandemic situation like today's.
Hopefully it, like you said, I couldn't agree more, and hopefully it shifts that divide towards positive peace, and we put more focus on realizing that we are all one in this globe.
Of course.
Thank you for joining us, Azad. We might wrap that up there now. So all the best with your last year doing your PhD at UNE, and I'm sure that we will see you around the campus very soon when this is all finished.
See you too. Thank you so much. And it's lovely meeting you too. Yeah.